What's up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. We are here at day two of Terrificon in Connecticut, and I have a great guest today, kicking off the day. Amazing artist, one of my favorite artists, Aaron Cooter. Welcome, Aaron.
Hi, everybody.
Hello. I love your art. I'm always very excited whenever I see your name on a book. You know, and this is being way too honest. This isn't even a question. This is just plussing you up. But seriously, there's always a discussion about, like, why do you buy books? Do you buy it for the writer? Do you buy it for the artist? Do you buy it for the team? Your name is always a must-pick up for me.
That's humblingly awesome.
It's great. Yeah. I mean, you have such a unique style, and I was going through some interviews that you've done earlier today before we were getting on, and I know there's a bunch of people that were influential to you when you were coming up. Do you feel like now, 14 plus years in, do you feel like you've come around to your own style versus being inspired? Where do you feel you are in that journey?
That's something I constantly kind of battle with. It's not so much a matter of trying to find my own style. It's trying to find my own comfort zone.
Okay.
There's a whole artistic argument of style and what somebody's looking for in what they're making as an artist. And I've gotten to the point where I feel like my influences still kind of show in my work. I think I found my own voice in that. I'm solely just trying. I'm not trying anymore, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, is that there's a comfort zone that you find when you do this so repetitively that whatever your voice is what shows up.
Was there a specific book or issue where you felt like it kind of snapped in, or was it a slow process?
Every book is different. Like, every issue is different. Like, when I was on Avengers Forever, that book did help, like, push me in a way, because almost every issue was a different genre. And finding my own voice in a different genre is kind of the fun part of being an artist now, at this point in my career.
Yeah.
You've gotten kind of past this whole, like constantly fanboying over other artists and stuff like that, and so you just find this breath in yourself, and the way to push that is to delve into other genres. Avengers Forever did that a lot for me. I was also working with inkers a lot more in that book, so it gave me more of a perspective of what it was like to be a colorist or just a penciler. And it's like the phone game, where, you know, when somebody says something and whispers it to somebody else's ear, and how that translates down the line. Comic books are like that, in that I draw the pencils, then I hand it to the inker, and they do the inks, and then the colorist does their thing. So you don't really, you have an idea of what you want it to be in the end product, but what that end product is has two other people in it that you may or may not have had any conversations with at all.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, to that end then, like you're saying, comics is a team sport, right? It's everybody working together, and ultimately, not to belabor a metaphor, but like passing the ball and being like, good job, you did it. I know this very well from the writing perspective, but from the art perspective, if you do see something that you feel like, oh no, that went wildly wrong in inking or coloring, is there a way to backpedal that at all?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mean, that's the thing with any team sport.
Yeah.
You have the ability to chime in, and everybody's professional. You know, it doesn't turn into, like, any sort of ego game where, I mean, I guess maybe with some people, but, like, the whole concept of you're all making a product together allows for that communication. Like every time I get in colors, I'll send the colorist notes of like, oh, I was thinking of it more in this, but I don't want to step on your toes, sort of thing. And yeah, I mean, there's always steps to, like, try to get it as good as you can before it goes to print. Like,
yeah.
That's the ultimate, like, too late moment.
I want to ask you about your current work, obviously, on Daredevil in a second. I want to ask you about your current work on Daredevil in a second. But first, just to stay on Avengers Forever, when you're doing something like that, where you're dealing with all these multiversal variants of the same character, how does that challenge you from an artistic perspective? Because, say you're drawing Robbie Reyes, you kind of know, like, what Robbie Reyes looks like.
Yeah.
Suddenly, potentially, I don't remember whether this happened at issue, but potentially you're drawing hundreds of different Robbie Reyes from throughout the multiverse.
For sure. I don't think I did hundreds of Robbie Reyes, but...
Well, there was just one of him. That was it. That was a terrible example.
That was
the whole plot.
Right, exactly. you know, that was one of the joys of the book, was coming up with a bunch of designs for a bunch of different characters that I've loved throughout my comic book buying life.
Mm-hmm.
And the freedom that in particular in that title, that it allowed me to, like, just go crazy with design and coming up with variations on heroes that we know and love. It's a double-edged sword, though. Like, it might be fun to come up with, like, a new design for Ant-Man Tony Stark.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, making it visually compelling enough to convey to the reader that not only this is Ant-Man, but this is Tony Stark. You know, they could bite you in the butt.
Yeah.
You know. But the freedom that the other side of that was cool, because, like, with there was a Carol Danvers issue where where I think in the script Jason Aaron had a part where he wrote it as, like, it would take place in Victorian England, and I think what he had in mind was kind of maybe more of a Mike Mignola,
mm-hmm,
sort of vampire-ish sort of feel. And as soon as he said in the script, as soon as he said, like, Victorian era, my mind went to Alice in Wonderland.
Mm.
So I drew all the like side characters as animal, like, amalgamations.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, because of the freedom of the book, of the it being a multiverse sort of stuff, that was welcomed with wide arms, you know. I couldn't do that in Daredevil.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Daredevil then. So, pretty much the frequent refrain with Daredevil is whenever a new writer takes on the book, the previous writer knocks over the Jenga blocks and is like, good luck, we ruined Daredevil.
Right.
What's it like for the artist, though?
Well, you know, it's it was interesting to... Well, when they asked me if I wanted to do Daredevil, immediately I was like, yes. I don't even think they got the period in there, or the question mark.
Daredevil.
Do you want to do Daredevil? And yes. and it was only after that I found out he was going to be a priest, that he was that his identity was going to be wiped from the minds of everybody around him. And to me, that was refreshing, because it gives you the opportunity to kind of recreate, or maybe not recreate, but have more of a fresh angle on it without knocking over the Jenga box,
mm-hmm,
you know. As an artist, Daredevil is one of those genre books that it's so ingrained in everybody's mind what Daredevil looks like and what a Daredevil book should look like.
Yeah.
The challenge for me is to constantly kind of push myself into honoring what came before,
mm-hmm,
but also not, like, you know, doing what I want to do. How I see Matt interpreting his senses in a visual two-dimensional book in ways that haven't necessarily been done before, or at least try to, you know?
Well, the other big aspect of the book is you have the seven deadly sins are inhabiting all of these different characters that are throughout Matt's life. And so you've got not necessarily demonic versions of, say, She-Hulk or Wolverine or currently Kingpin in the current issues, but you have these demons sort of riding them in a way. Where did that come from? Where did the visual come from?
So the concept is Saladin's, and in a lot of cases, I've when people have asked me to design characters and stuff, I'll do like three or four different versions, and I did for this too, and send them in and get their feedback and kind of tweak it and hone it and kind of workshop it into something that we all agree is going to something that hopefully will work. And this, he had more of a clear idea as to what he wanted than other writers I've worked with in the past.
Okay.
But when I say that, I kind of take those suggestions and kind of throw them out the window. Or, well, more so put them in the back of my mind.
Yeah.
Because if I'm designing something for somebody, that means I'm not showing my voice, and I'm going to have issues drawing it later on. So that said, I think there's only one of the seven deadly sins that I didn't design. But when I design when I design characters for any sense, I try to get to know their personality. Even if it's like the seven deadly sins, there's still an element of what are you communicating and what are you trying to pick from in society to I'm kind of stumbling with my words here, but there's not a language for art.
Yeah.
And there is, but a lot of people don't know it. And
you can go as wonky.
Either. Oh, okay. there's elements that I'll take from society, of iconic images that we know, and try to use them as influence for what I'm coming up with in the end result.
Yeah.
There's a character that, I don't want to get into that, but.
Is this may be something that I did want to ask you about, if you don't mind. This might be the first demon that shows up. I will frame this up as, yep, I'm Jewish. I read the book. I was like, this is a cool design. And then I saw this controversy come out, and I know you came out pretty strongly against it. I agree with what you said. I'd just be curious to hear from your perspective what would happen.
So I don't want to give that any more
voice
than it's already gotten, because it's a bunch of bullshit. That, I got really upset about that.
Yeah.
I was raised Yeah, maybe this should be off the record, thing. But my stepmother's Jewish. I was raised in a very diverse spiritual group of family, Christianity, Lakota Nation, Judaism. There was no hate in my design at fucking all. Yeah. Absolutely. And the fact that that was kind of spun out there in this kind of yellow journalism sort of trying to clickbait getcha sort of thing really, really touched a nerve in my heart, and kind of broke me for a minute.
Huh.
That said, that particular design was based on the dude from Big Lebowski, combined with Jay Leto's character in Blade Runner 2,
mm-hmm.
like that whole, and then aged up and put horns on them. That whole thing was very, very disturbing to me.
I'm really sorry to hear that. I mean, yeah. Our reaction, I remember when we talked about it on the show, was maybe read the rest of the story. And I think once it became abundantly clear what was going on with these characters and creatures, there was no question there about what was happening in that issue.
I think it was just like a sensational try to clickbait. There's other things involved, but like I'm not involved with them, so I don't want to throw any shade at anybody. But
no worries at all. Let's jump forward then to the current issues, where you got Kingpin is being ridden by one of the seven deadly sins. What was it like drawing that? Like drawing this powered up, roided out Kingpin.
Fun. So with that, you know, it's not hard to associate the idea of greed with Kingpin. The challenge of drawing Kingpin is that it's one of like juxtaposition. Mm-hmm. And it's the same thing with drawing a character like Galactus or any of those larger characters that probably can't fit through doorways, and making them like more tangible, like have their conveying height and imposing figure like girth in a comic book. It's something that we all know from everything that we've seen, mm-hmm. but when you're doing a book like Daredevil, it's like they're not superheroes. They're heroes with powers.
Yeah.
And so there's a realism, there's a textuality that you need to get across. And so that's the trick with Kingpin in any book, whether he's a demon or not. and so amping him up is just like, oh, well, yeah. All right, let's throw the throttles on and amp this guy. Like the idea of hands being all over him. Mm-hmm. I got that from coming up with this idea that Kingpin isn't like a touchy feely sort of person, mm-hmm. and I thought visually it might add to the disturbance level of seeing him like this when he has these like hands just like randomly coming out of his jacket. Mm-hmm. Like some Japanese horror movie, you know.
That was exactly what I got from that. So
nice.
It worked on me.
Yeah,
I'm creeped out.
Yeah.
Coming up, I know you just did this issue that just came out. I think you're off the next two issues, and then are you coming back? They haven't solicited that far ahead.
I'm working on 16 right now.
Okay.
It's actually kind of refreshing for me to I have to take breaks because I'm not like the fastest artist in the world.
Yeah.
But it's nice for me to like kind of jump ahead so that I don't get bogged down in here we are drawing the same sort of moment, mm-hmm. for two issues, which you might need story wise. But it helps me to keep reinvesting, to be like, okay, now we're at this.
Yeah. Well, getting back to the team sport thing we were talking about earlier. Yeah. So if you draw, maybe my numbers are wrong here, but you draw issue number 12 or 13.
Yeah, I just did 12.
12. Yeah. And then you have the next couple of issues off and you come back for 16. I assume there are things visually that you need to pick up on from that previous issue. How does that work out timing wise?
So when that happens, ideally, there will either be something in place to say, okay, this is what this is going to look like, or I have to come up with it, and then the artists that are doing the issues previous to mine are going to have to use that as reference. Mm-hmm. So sort of backtracking it before. After the fact.
So it's basically that's why editors are there.
Yeah, yeah. That's where editors come in very, very useful. Yeah.
Well, obviously, Daredevil is the main thing. Before I let you go, is there anything else you want to plug, Aaron? Anything else that people should check out from you?
The only thing else that I'm working on, and it's kind of like a slow roll as I can squeak out sort of like any moment, any extra moment if I like a late script or something like that, sort of sidebar project, is that I'm trying to recreate the Marvel Universe cards.
Oh, really?
From 1991. Like all the I'm going to do an image of all the Marvel Universe characters that were in the original card set, and then auction them off as for proceeds going to Alzheimer's research.
That is so cool.
In honor of my dad, so,
oh my gosh, that's amazing. So is that, are they going to be individual cards or as a poster? Or?
Well, you know, that the format is still being worked out. I've got, I've only got like maybe 7 or 8 of them done out of 100. And that's been over almost 2 years now, I guess.
Okay.
Like the first couple were 11 by 17. They'll be fully finished pieces. Like, you know, well, they say cover quality.
Yeah.
You know, the next batch I'm doing are, I think, on 9x12, just so I can do more and not have it be a retirement project, you know, years down the line.
That's so awesome. Are you going to wait to auction it until it's all done, or can people check it out?
Still working it out, I think I want to get at least a batch of, like, 25 done before I do the first auction.
That's such an awesome project.
Still
that's
figuring out, like, where I want to auction them off, but... I'll give you a shout when I have more details.
Thank you. That'll give me time to save up all the money so I can put it on the bids. Aaron, thank you so much for taking the time to chat. Thanks for coming out here at Terrificon. And good luck. Can't wait to see your next issue of Daredevil. And if you'd like to support our podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about comics. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at Terrificon.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy. But being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care. And BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com today to get 10% off your first month.